If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com, go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
There's another world inside of me that you may never see. There are secrets in this life that I can't hide. Somewhere in this darkness, there's a light that I can't find. Maybe it's too far away. Maybe I'm just blind.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there in the
maybe
middle of nowhere.
Maybe I'm just blind.
Loud verbal display, challenging EP in general, out in the middle of nowhere.
That's what I was doing. I actually...
So hold me when I'm here, not when I'm alone. Hold me when I'm scared, and love me when I'm gone. Everything I am, and everything in me. Want to be the one you wanted me to be. I'll never let you down, even if I could. I'd give you everything, if only for your good. So hold me when I'm here.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com, go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news. But you can find it here, with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. The folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Works with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out a reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throwing his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Joe Montaldo Show. I hope everyone's having a great evening, great morning, great afternoon, wherever you are on our big, beautiful blue planet. You know, I say this every week. There's nowhere else I want to be but here. Thanks for everybody who sent me all the great candies and presents and stuff while I was in the hospital. I don't know how y'all found out. But okay. Still, that was sweet of everybody, and you know, I gotta say, the 10-day stint in the hospital, I lost 14, I think it was almost closer to 16 pounds. I was like, yeah, put me well on the way to a good diet. anyway, it sucked though, to be honest with y'all. But anyway, I wanted to reiterate, you know, everybody who sent me something, and nice letters, and all the Facebook fans, and all the rest of the social medias we're on these days, I want to thank you for... Well, just for being nice. It's rare, and all the people who sent me prayers and get well, thank you for that, because, you know, I wanted to get well. I don't like hospitals. They suck. And considering I went in for something that shouldn't have put me in a hospital, I was kind of like, huh, what? It's nothing like when you go to a hospital because you want to get some medicine and they tell you, oh, we're going to put you in for 10 days. So that was a unique experience. Plus, it decided, I think 2 days after I was in the hospital, it started raining, and it rained down here for 16 days straight. You thought the biblical flood was coming. It was raining so much. But it is New Orleans, and it is the South, and it does rain a lot down here. So last couple of years, not so much, but I guess it's going back to its let's see if we can drown everybody thing. We're going to get to our guest in just a second. A couple other things right quick. I see we have a new telescope being launched in 2018. It'll be the most powerful telescope ever launched. Should be great for finding more planets. I mean, you know, Kepler's been doing a great job for finding planets, and they've been finding them actually with, what was it called, microburst. Oh, fuck, I can't think of the damn name, but they've been finding them a couple ways. The deep-range planets are found. It's just a blip. That's how they found them. Kepler's finding them a little bit different. They actually track the shadows in front of the suns as they move across it. So, you know, we're really starting to find stuff. We're finding things close to the size of Earth. We're finding things in the inhabitable zone. But it's, in its infinite wisdom, which they amaze me sometimes how dumb they are, only has the inhabitable zone listed is the Goldilocks zone, like where we are, you know, where Venus, Earth, and Mars is, and where the fifth planet used to be, or the asteroid belt, whatever you want to call it. That's all considered the Goldilocks zone. That's an inhabitable zone. But recently we realized that planets around Jupiter and Saturn can also hold life. There's heat coming from Jupiter. The gravitational forces against the different moons causes them to heat up inside. They have active volcanoes, active springs, active geysers. We know one of them has an ocean the size of the planet now, a fairly deep ocean the size of the planet. So we're learning more and more, I should say, the size of the moon. We're learning more and more that life can be in other places. So, you know, NASA needs to reconsider what it considers the Goldilocks zone. It's not just where these planets are. It's also anything around big giants. And remember, in the early days, 30, 40, 50 times Jupiter, that's just mind-boggling. That's as big as our damn sun almost. These are huge, massive gas planets. Well, they could have 30, 40, 50, 60 moons, even 100 moons like Jupiter has, 50, I think. So they could have lots of moons around them. All these different moons could have different types of life going on them, plus the inhabitable zone. So I really think it's time for NASA to redefine the way it sees life. You know, I was reading about a solar system the other day that I found particularly interesting. The first three planets, they don't know if there's actually planets behind them. They're pretty sure, but they don't know for sure, were huge. I mean, they're 30, 40 times the size of Jupiter. So as these planets would be orbiting this planet on a fairly regular basis, it would be kind of eerie, I think, after a while. To me, it would be kind of eerie. I love that kind of science. There's a lot of good science out there right now. I know in, I think, 2 weeks, we got an all-science show coming up. We'll be talking about different types of space exploration. Also, a personal friend of mine asked me if we would talk about some of the newer weapons being deployed right now, from lasers to rail guns to a couple other things that are out there. Some of the stuff is promising. Some of it's junk, but that's something else we'll be talking about in the near future, so y'all can come by and check out that. We've got some paranormal stuff coming up in a couple of weeks, too. Just dabbling around in it, you know. I go back and forth on ghosties on a regular basis, so I'm still not convinced that they're anything more than dimensional bleed-throughs. So, one day, maybe somebody will convince me, but as it stands today, not so much. I'm just saying. There seems to be, for a lot of the paranormal stuff, there seems to be some pretty good alternative explanations other than did people coming back to haunt you. I'm just saying, you know, don't hate on the messenger, you know. But be sure to tune in for those shows. I'll post them on Facebook and on the website so you can find them as well. And you can check that out. Tonight's guest is Jim Allen. He's the author of Smoke and Mirrors. And it's Smoke and Mirrors, actually, I should say, because it's S-O-M-K-E-N, Mirrors. And you can go to the website. It's linked right to the Amazon site. So if you're interested in the book or the author, just pop over to UFO on the Cover site. You'll see Jim's book cover right there. Just click on the cover. It'll take you right back to Amazon along with the bio. You can check it all out. His information in the bio is actually listed all below the page, so you can go check that out as well. We're going to be discussing a wide range of topics tonight. Actually, he wrote a really good book. And before I let him talk, I'm going to talk a little bit about this, because I was telling him at the start of the at while we were waiting for the show to start that more than likely we'd have to have him back in a few weeks because I'm not sure if we could get to all the material. There's a lot of good material in the book. Now, I'm sure some of y'all are going to agree with it and some of y'all are not, especially in the stuff with Kennedy and Ruby Ridge and Waco and a few other things that I mentioned in the book, money trails and stuff like that. I've heard some of this before. Some of it is a little bit different to me and newer. There's some stuff in the Kennedy case that we're definitely going to get into a little bit, but there's a lot of good material here, especially for my NWO friends out there. Y'all going to love this show particularly. I have to be honest with y'all about this. And I really think when we get through it all this, y'all might actually learn something here. So, Jim, how you doing tonight?
I'm great.
You're great. And, you know, I'm glad to have you on tonight. We're going to start in just a minute. I want to let everybody know my regular co-host for News on the Flip Side is with me tonight, Stephanie Benetti. Stephanie, tell everybody hi.
Hello. Actually, it took every fiber of my being not to speak.
I know. It's hard on her when she co-hosts. She does all the intro on the other show.
Exactly. I wanted to say a couple things, and I was thinking, no, I can't say it. And then I was thinking, Joe, would you just stop? And then I said, I can't do that. So welcome, everyone, to the Joe Montaldo Show.
Yes, and 70 joining us.
Well,
go ahead, Joe.
Stephanie and Joe, it's a great honor to be on your show, and I really appreciate it, and I think we can have lots of fun.
Oh, I think we're going to have a great time tonight. I think there's going to be a lot of good information that gets exchanged, and I think the audience is going to really enjoy themselves. I see the servers are filling up right now. Dang, I think Live 365 might be sold out. If it is and you listen to us, you know, don't forget Ustream, don't forget Shoutcast. You can get on there. You can always go to iTunes and log in. You can catch us on YouTube. You can get us on Google. Pretty much all the Microsoft services.
Pal Talk.
There's a lot of ways to catch us, and if you're on one of the many paid servers we're on, y'all know who y'all are, so everyone from Ozzycast to Northstar and to Satcom in Europe, so y'all can catch us over there as well. And as far as the people who watch us on Dish and on the Dishes in Europe and Ozzy, welcome as well. You know, we have a wide range of audience. It's one of the reasons this show is as popular as it is because in the early days we got picked up by some of the overseas Dish networks and then by a couple in the United States, so we're always playing 24 hours a day on the TV sets in the back, so you can always find us, which is really cool. And it does bring in for a lot of audience. The only bad part about the Dish audience, which probably makes about 20% of the audience, maybe 18%, is they really can't interact unless they go get on their computer. If you're listening on your TV, you know, unless you got a smart TV.
Then, all right, that being said, let's move forward.
Well, we have a couple of little sales points here right quick. Remember, Thursday night, Flipside Lights, Stephanie and I will be talking about current news tomorrow evening. There's a lot of current news. Mm-hmm. You know the show is very, very, very fast-paced. Frankly, and that show is an hour long, and it feels like it's 10 minutes.
Absolutely,
it's rare. Last week we did get in 6 topics, which was amazing. By the way, we usually don't get any more than 4, and it just never seems to make it past there. Don't forget to everybody's regular lineups back. So on right after us on Thursday is Joel, and Joel has a new co-host, which is Eric. I got to get his last name, but you can catch Joel and Eric. They'll be on Thursday night. Yes, I know, Steph. I found it the hard way, but anyway. Anyway, you can catch them out on Thursday nights on after hours AM, and check them out. Remember, on Friday you can catch Church of Mapes with Jeffrey, the crazy man Pritchard. He's just out of control.
Over the top.
He's just out of control. But anyway, you catch him on from 6 to 8, and you can catch Jason and Heather. They'll be back on schedule this week, so you can catch them up. I see there was some comments on where were they. I'm not going to say the rest of the comment on the air, but
yeah, I saw that.
And I'll have to send Jason over there to read it.
Jim.
So he could address Jim this Friday night. but anyway, it was great. I had a blast. Of course, on Saturdays you're going to have Voice of the People. Then of course, 4 hours of Stephanie and I and News on the Flip Side, and we get in on that show. We get into some really heated stuff. A lot of stuff that I noticed that mainstream news is just scared to touch. By the way, Jim, you would love this show. You'd have a blast when we get in, because we get into stuff that I'm telling you, mainstream is just scared to touch. They just no, we're not going there. We're not going there. But then of course you got Trees following us after that. So with Global News Focus, so you can come check her out, and then of course Monday, Crazy Chip is back with Mind Cemetery, and then on Tuesday, he's back again with Big Shoulder Sports Show, which is doing quite well these days. So if you're a Chicago sports fan or in the general Northeast sports fan, he's also in Carolina, but he's not a big fan of Carolina, but he covers those topics, so you can come check him out and listen to him there as well. And then there's a couple of different shows that flip-flop back and forth on Tuesday night, so it just happens to be what's on there. And then, of course, Wednesday, you have me all to yourself. We don't let anybody get behind us anymore in case we want to expand or grow or push the limits a little bit here. So, anyway, on that note, we're going to get back to it with our guest here. I hope everybody's going to enjoy the show tonight. And remember, any comments, complaints, moan, gripes, or bitches, write to Stephanie, because you know what I'm going to tell you. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, they're more scared of me than they are of you, Joe.
Right? So. No, they are. Right to you. Right to UPRN at Cox.net or IC. If it's alien-related, write to ICAR at Cox.net. If it's radio or host or
you know, I would just tell them, like, write it up, fold it up, send it to my mother, and she'll tell you what to do with it.
And of course,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. And I know she would tell him what to do with it, too. And everybody else tonight, if you want to write in, you can always join us in the Pal Talk virtual audience. I see it's starting to fill up now. You can write to me on Facebook. Oh, I have two of the accounts open tonight. The IRCAR account and the abduction account will both be open tonight, so you can write there as well. The MySpace account is open, and Twitter will be open. I know I don't use Twitter much, but I'm going to try. There's like 22,000 fans there, so I'm going to try. I hate Twitter, 160 characters. What are you supposed to hell say in 160 characters, 140, whatever it is? That's like, hello, how are you, goodbye. I mean, come on. It just seems like a waste of time. But anyway, I hope everybody checks it out tonight. So let's get back to our guest tonight. Sorry about that, Jim. We had to do a little sale business.
Well, Jim, did I tell you that this guy is a blabbermouth or what?
Hey, we got to take care of business.
He talks like a valley boy.
Yeah.
Out west here, we have things called Valley Girls that come from Van Nuys in California, and they talk real fast, and Joe is able to do that.
I know, but, like, look, I'm from New York. Do you think I speak as fast as he does?
Yeah, she's don't worry. She can out-talk me some nights. So don't even worry about it. A lot of shows, she gets more talk time in than I do.
Oh, please. I never do.
I think actually currently the balance is on her side. She's got more than I do.
I don't agree.
There's a couple of them where her
and Teresa. You can say whatever you want,
the whole
but
last
it.
Hour.
Prove it.
we can talk about that. Anyway, getting down to serious business.
That being said, let's speak to Jim. All right, let me just say this. So, how this came about, this whole deal, someone wrote to me on my account on Facebook, Teresa, was it Jackowitz? Jackowitz.
Yes.
And she wrote to me, and she said, I know this person, and, you know, would you like to interview him on your show? And then I wrote her back, and I said, but I do news and politics and so on and so forth. And I said, what is, you know, the concept? And she said, oh, it's UFOs and this and that. And I said, oh, this is perfect. And then I said, well, you know, my co-host also owns the radio station and, you know, does a UFO show. So, you know, call me, so on and so forth. So I had a conversation with her, and then subsequently I had a conversation with you, and then, you know, whatever, and then I put you guys together, and here we are. So this is how this program came to be.
You know, well, anyway, welcome here, Jim. I'm glad you're here with us, and thanks, Steph. I mean, it's always good when we bring in guests, especially ones we haven't talked to a half a million times. Not to offend anybody, guys, I love all of you.
Yeah, I appreciate that as well.
Jim, I started out reading, when I was reading yesterday afternoon, I was thinking, I was going through, especially when, you know, in chapter one, when you're talking about the ship and how you get there and all. I got to tell y'all, guys and girls, first off, Jim, you can come cut my grass anytime for $2, my friend. I'm just saying. You know.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that? What was that?
I'm not hearing you well there, fella. You know, I was thinking, well, you know, the damnedest things jump out at me sometime, and I'm reading away, and I'm thinking $2. I'm like, what can you get for $2 today? Not much. I mean, really, not much. Thanks to inflation, which we're going to talk about later, because there's some good stuff in the book about this later on. We're going to talk about that later. But, you know, I just got to thinking about it. I mean, today, you know, to get my grass cut at my place in Mississippi, the guy charges me $50 twice a month. Now, it is an acre and a half, so I shouldn't complain. But down here in Metairie, where I live in the city with the little yard, it's still like $35. I'm like, get out of here, kid. I'm cutting myself at $35, man. Come on. It just seems to be ridiculous. But I got to say, you sounded like a little hustler when you were young.
I was. I'll tell you, I was getting rich at $2 a pop to mow lawns. And that was a lot of money back then. 1952.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That actually was a pretty good clip back in the day. When you think, what was a Coke back then? About 10 cents, 5 cents, something like that? I got a 1955 Coke machine. It was 5 cents, actually.
I think so. A cup of coffee was a nickel, and you could get all the refills you wanted.
Yeah, and today a cup of coffee is $2, and you'd be lucky to get any kind of refill unless you happen to be at a regular kind of restaurant. Everybody else can look at you like you're stupid. Of course, if you stop at one of the specialty coffee shops, I think what's a cheap coffee there? $5? Gotta bet you in New York it's close to $10. It's just ridiculous. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is because later on, ladies and gentlemen, we're skipping around a little bit here, but later on there's some really good material in here about money and how things came to be and stuff like that. I'm going to get into that later, but I just like kind of playing it up on it because the way the book starts out to me is just very, very interesting. Now, you know, I want you to just kind of tell the audience a little bit about yourself. What was your frame of mind before anything happened? You know, what were you, I got a kind of sense of it. I mean, you seemed like you were well-rounded. You had a pretty good childhood. You seemed like you were fairly happy. But anyway, let me let you talk, and I'll shut up.
Well, I had a great set of parents. And basically, we lived in outside of Miami, Florida, in a place called Coral Gables. Mm-hmm. And I had asthma real bad. And a doctor told my parents they should take me to Colorado. So we moved from Miami, Florida to Denver, Colorado. And on the way, we stopped to eat lunch at a rest stop in the panhandle of Florida. And I found a little puppy, a dog, in a cardboard box. And it was like, I don't know, 10 inches long. And it was way off the beaten track. I went out in the woods behind this rest stop. And I brought the little puppy back to my folks, which at that time probably wouldn't have lasted more than 2 or 3 hours because it would have been at the very bottom of the food chain back then.
Yeah.
And they let me keep the dog, so I acquired a dog on the way to Colorado. And I had a lot of interest back then when I was young. I built model airplanes that I flew combat with. We used to tie a ribbon to the tails and fly them on cables and try to cut the other guy's ribbon. And I started snow skiing in Colorado when we first got there. I got an interest in that. And my biggest thing was I liked to trout fish. I liked to go fishing for trout. My folks liked it too. So they used to take me up in the mountains quite a bit. So I was real industrious, and I needed skis, and I needed fishing rods, and I needed model airplane kits to build, but I didn't have any money, and my parents were real poor, so this is where the $2 deal comes up. Basically, my dad said, hey, you mow the neighbor's lawn for $2, go find you 10 more, and you'll have money to buy those skis, and that's what I did. So I grew up in a good environment. I learned to work, and I learned to make money and use it. And basically, that was about my frame of mind at that time.
You know,
we're starting.
Well, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
We're starting this story in 1952, actually.
Yeah, 19
is where we're starting, in a place called Golden, Colorado, which is right at the base of the Front Range of the Rocky Mountains.
You know, I find it interesting that you lived in Coral Gable. Especially, that's where your boy built his castle, which no one knows how the hell he moved all them big stones around. Still a mystery, even today. I'm sure it doesn't really mean anything. It's just fascinating that the topic matter we're talking about tonight, and you actually lived there. I've been there many times to go down there and check it out. You know, I find it interesting too. You know, growing up, I did a lot of model building. I built a lot of gas powered airplanes. I built a lot of rockets. I used to love sending rockets up. Matter of fact, we would sometimes when we were flying the gas-propelled planes, we'd actually be launching the rockets in between them. It was just an insanity. But I always loved that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was thinking about fishing. You would love my place in Mississippi. We have our own private dock with a boat launching all behind the house. But 2 times a year, the speckled trout get in there so thick you can actually scoop them out of there with a net if you want to. Any type of lure with a like a popping rig, or even just a regular on-top worm, man, they will snap them like you wouldn't believe. You'd love it. I'm just saying you'd love it. But it's just interesting. We've got those kind of things in common as well. Now, Colorado to me is interesting as well. Colorado is a hot zone for a lot of things. It's a hot zone for ufology stuff. There's been, what, 3 mass shootings in Colorado that I know of, 2 in recent times. You know, there's a lot of stuff. It's one of those states that's, you know, not really has any one direction. You have a lot of independents there. You have a lot of liberals there. You have a lot of conservatives there. So the state seems to be like a third. It's a very interesting place to talk about. And it does seem to be, at least parts of it seem to be hot with different types of UFO activity. And ladies and gentlemen, you'll know why I'm bringing that up in just a little while. But going back now, you sound like you were a pretty good fisherman there.
Brother, I loved it. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so if you could go catch a trout and eat them for dinner, yeah, you know, that was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, trout are great. Spag, you know, rainbow, spag, there's a couple of trout. Green, I mean, there's a lot of different trout out
there.
Yeah. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. And, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you were talking about the Ritz cracker crumbs. I've done that myself before. I've also done a couple other types like that. It's really good, by the way, depending on what kind of batter you use. But anyway, I keep getting sidetracked here. Sorry about that. I just got to thinking about it. It's one of those things. It's a really great recipe. And it's just weird to see how those kind of things stay in our society and move forward. Of course, my son looks at a fish like, what is that, Dad? He likes two fish.
Yeah.
No, he likes the fish. He just don't like to eat the fish. And I'm like, dude, you know, what do you mean you don't like fish? No, that's okay. You know, there's a lot of shellfish down here, too. A lot of the kids grow up on crawfish and shrimp and stuff like that. But anyway, so the reason we're bringing up the fish.
Lord have mercy, ADD.
I know, but the reason we're bringing up, there's a method to my madness, trust me. The reason we're bringing up the fish is one of the things we're going to be talking about, and I'm going to have Jim describe to you all in just a little bit, is a particular trip he made up there while he was fishing. But you just were fairly regular. I know you said your family did a lot of camping and stuff like that, which has got to be great for a young man to get outside. And Colorado's a beautiful country. I mean, young
yeah. All you needed was the gas money and a vehicle, and back then it wasn't overpopulated, so you know you could go just about anywhere and camp and really enjoy yourself in the summertime. You know, it was great. And
yeah, I imagine it would.
One of the more significant things about where I grew up is in Golden, Colorado, that's where Coors Beer is made.
is this really, really spring water they put in these beers, or is this kind of something pumped out of the ground, you know, coming from
I don't even drink beer.
I don't either, but I mean, I used to when I was young. And I actually drank quite a bit of Coors when I was young, Coors, Dixie, and a couple other brands. But is it really fresh spring water, or is it some BS water?
Well, trust me, what they say is true, but there's an illusion, as there is in everything. And when they show you the water coming down over the waterfalls, you know, up in the mountains, that's spring water. But their water comes from 2 ponds out in front of the plant. They're spring fed,
okay.
And that's where they get the supply of water they need to do what they do there at the plant.
No fish.
But the beer, the beer is good. It's really good.
Okay.
And, you know, all my high school coaches worked there in the courtesy lounge, and when you got to be a senior in high school, they used to tell you, look, we don't want you drinking Coca-Cola and stuff. Come on up to the courtesy lounge after school, and we'll take care of you. So that's how you can become an alcoholic real easy.
The sad part is the damn beer is probably better for you than the damn Cokes are. You know, it's interesting you bring that up because I notice some people, when they have certain style contacts, quit doing a lot of things. It just transforms. We'll get a little bit more into that later. But it's interesting. So no fish in the ponds at the Coors plant, though, right? I bet you wouldn't let you go fishing.
No.
They're probably like, nah, you can't go fishing in there. Nah. We don't want you messing up all the water tables. So you used to just get up on the weekends and just get up in the mornings and just take off up in the mountains and go hanging out? Now, wait, before you even talk about that, where is Golden, Colorado, in the grand scheme of Colorado? North, south, by Boulder?
Okay.
By Denver?
It's about 20 miles due west of Denver.
Okay.
And Golden is right at the base of the Rocky Mountains. When you go out of Golden, you go right up into the front range of the Rocky Mountains. So it's kind of a a small community. There was hardly anybody lived there back then when we moved there. But now, I don't know, there's probably, I'm going to guess and say, 100,000 people there.
Damn, well, it's definitely grown from, I think you said there were 3,000 when you lived there?
I think it was around 2,000 or 2,500 when we first moved there, so it was real small. But Denver now has grown to over 4.2 million people,
Denver's
the city itself.
Denver's gotten huge. Of course, I don't know why anybody wants to live that high up in the air, but I've been to Denver twice, and actually three times. And every time I'm there, I'm like, yeah, I'm used to much thicker air than this.
I will tell you, there's more than one way to get high in Denver, Colorado now.
Yes, I know that just from going up there, man. Lord.
Rocky Mountain High, right?
You know, it's interesting y'all said that because I made a bet with a friend of mine about 2 years ago. I said, watch how much funny sightings go up, like UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings and all kind of other sightings. And just in the last year, the amount of sightings in Colorado have tripled. I'm like, you bunch of stoners. Y'all getting out there shitting stoned. And no telling what the hell y'all seeing, especially with this new pot. That stuff fry your brain. I just think it's...
Well, Colorado is where all the cattle mutilation started, and Linda Moulton Howe used to be a newscaster there on Channel 5 and out of Denver, and I kind of sort of grew up with her. And the first recorded case of a mutilation was a horse, and the horse's name was Snippy. And she went out on that and started investigating. I know you've interviewed her, and she's an amazing person, boy. She has really gotten in on it.
She has. I actually gave her something to think about because, you know, she's always referred to the cattle mutilations as extraterrestrial. But we launched a big investigation about 12 years ago. And I started calling some police friends of mine, and we started doing a lot of traveling. And so a friend of mine calls me up, and he says, hey, Joe, have you ever thought about checking with the insurance companies about these cattle mutilations? So I started calling in Colorado and New Mexico and Arizona, Southern California, Montana, and a couple other places. And come to find out, in most of the places, almost 95% of all the cattle mutilated were insured. Now, that's a big coincidence, and extraterrestrials really aren't going to give a shit, excuse my language, if your cattle or insured, but the government, if they were testing for nuclear radiation, because most people don't realize this, 95% of all the cattle mutilations fall within what would be considered the contaminated zone from the testing. Colorado, in case y'all didn't know this, Colorado had nukes tested, just like Louisiana did. I didn't know that, by the way. New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Southern California, they tested nukes in all of these places. And I found it interesting that the cattle mutilations were happening in the same zones. Also, and Linda and I talked about this, was the fact that most of the parts that were taken would have been where the radiation would have showed up the most intense. The organs that were removed is where the radiation would have accumulated the most. So if you were looking to see if there was contamination from food or groundwater, this is what you would have took. And on that also, in about half of the cases, there were black helicopters sighted and skid marks at different landing sites. So there was a lot more going on here than people. Whether E.T. took advantage of it and used it for something themselves, or the government took advantage of it and used it for something, somewhere along they definitely got involved. And the insurance alone was enough. And what really turned the key on this was a case down in South America where a general had like 150 cattle get mutilated and then another 150 disappear. Well, by the way, all the cows are insured. And then about 4 months later, they found half the cows stuffed in a raised water tower, just like one big massive melt of cow in there. Obviously, the guy who did it for the money. But these kind of things nobody was looking at, and we were the first organization to actually step back and say, you know what, there may be something else going on here. And so, like I told Linda, some of them may be alien, but I would bet you the vast majority of them were government-related because, like I like to tell anybody, there are no cattle mutilations east of the Mississippi River, and there's a lot of cattle east of the Mississippi River. Really, there's no cattle mutilations really in Texas. I think they can only think of two right offhand. So it was just a little fishy that they were happening in particular areas. There's really none in Europe. There's only been a handful even seen in Europe, and I think most of them were just copycats. So it cited that something else was going on, because really, if you're an extraterrestrial and you're going to mutilate cows in the United States, why wouldn't you do it all over the world? It just didn't make sense to me. So we got into it pretty heavy. But we wrote, since I've been in ufology for 30 years, we've rewritten a couple of cases. Because as an organization, we've had purview to a lot more information than individual researchers did. We have a lot more people that get involved in getting out and checking things, and that was one of the things we found. I got to tell you, Jim, the insurance thing was the biggest blow to the cattle mutilations I've ever seen. I mean, ufology hates to talk about it because, you know, they're all about selling ET. And sometimes you got to be honest and say, hey, we might have made a boo-boo here. This might be something else. Of course, I got messed with a few times for talking about it on the air. I don't think the government was appreciating the fact that we might have busted them checking for radiation contamination. I don't think they. And in the old days, you know, watching some of the stuff you talk about in the book in different areas, in the old days, it might have cost me more dearly. I'm probably lucky that it was in the 90s and 2000s when I started talking about that, because frankly, I think if it would have been in the 70s, or maybe even the early 80s, they might have found me floating in a swamp somewhere.
Well, there's any time unmarked black choppers are involved, you know something's going on.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Because they keep those babies in a pretty restricted area. They usually only fly them at night. They're equipped with all kinds of stuff like Blue Thunder used to have,
yeah,
which includes a whisper mode. I've had one come up behind me in the Nevada desert, and I couldn't even hear it, and I felt the wash from the blades.
Especially if you got your windows down in your car, you can feel I don't know how to explain it, guys. It's like a through your car. It's really weird, but you can feel it moving your car. Now you don't really hear them. No, they're really, really quiet. It amazes me that noisy thing can be that quiet. Because, you know, helicopters are noisy.
How about 25 years ago?
That's what I'm saying. While you're on that you bring up a good point. Most people don't realize the first stealth prototype rolled off the thing in 1979. And in case y'all didn't know this, ladies and gentlemen, the SR-71 Blackbird is a stealth jet. It looks like about the size of a Cessna on radar. That's why a lot of people, and at 80,000 feet, most radars couldn't even make out what it was, because it flew at 80,000 feet at Mach 6. That's incredible for something built in the 50s, people. Come on. That's a superstar. That it is still the fastest plane in the world in 2015. That tells you something about the state of technology back then. It was much better than any of us want to talk about. And, you know, today everything's great. I mean, we got pad this, phone that, scratch this, do that, app this. You know, we live in a very media-orientated world these days, but it doesn't even touch on the types of technology that are available today that, for whatever reason, the powers to be, I was going to say Uncle Sam, but we'll just say the powers to be, don't want to share with us. Maybe it's because we give them to our enemies. I don't know what the hell it is, but they just don't want to share with us. You know, Jim, I read something today interesting, and this will be something we can talk about in later on, but I read something today. It's interesting. Some doctors out of Johns Hopkins, MIT, and Harvard got together and said they're pretty sure with a four-shot treatment a year, they can not only stop aging, but even reverse it 20 or 30 years. And they're talking about this. You know, Masters and Johnson in 1998 had actually came out and said they pretty sure they figured out how to stop the aging gene. But even then, they were talking about the moral implications of all of us living 200, 300, 400, 500 years. What do you think?
Yeah, how about the moral implications of curing cancer for the pharmaceutical industry?
Actually, that in itself, you could have wrote two chapters of that. I mean, the pharmaceutical industry is just insane. And figure this out. Down here, you go buy some pills that cost you $300. Like when I was on Plavix, it was $280 a thing, and Nexium was $360. And I had to pay for that out of pocket. But yet in Canada, you could get Nexium for $22 and Plavix for $10. I'm like, really? I mean, how bad will we get screwed here?
You go to Mexico and see how cheap they are.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine had hepatitis C, and they got a cure for it. In case you didn't know this, ladies and gentlemen, that's a cure for hepatitis C. $90,000.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. The only reason he got it is because he was on Social Security. He got hurt a couple of years back. I couldn't get it. I'd be screwed. I'd be like, well, there's a cure, but it's not going to help me any.
Well, along the same lines, I know a doctor who is in northern Nevada, up in the Carson City area, who got a government grant to study AIDS a long time ago when it became a big deal. And he actually got a couple $1 million to study it. He's an MD and a scientist, and he cured over 100 cases of terminal AIDS. Some of them were like 2 weeks to live or less in full lesions, put them back out on the street, HIV negative. Now, you see, AIDS is a virus, and so is cancer. And the same treatment works for cancer. But do you think the FDA wants that to be made public?
Well, no,
not a chance.
No, they make too much money on the treatment of cancer. I mean, they're curing some cancers, but well, I'm with you on this. They make cancer as a money-making thing. AIDS is a money-making thing. You know, I know the Germans said a decade ago they had a vaccine for AIDS. The United States turned it down.
I'll give you the living proof on that one. Magic Johnson developed full-blown AIDS. They banned him from the NBA and said he couldn't play basketball. He went to Germany, got treated, came back, and he was HIV negative. Germany.
Look at what's his name, Peyton Manning. His career was over. He wasn't going to play football anymore. You know, he's up there in Denver now. And went to Europe, got the surgery, came back as good as new. Stuff that, in case you ought to notice, ladies and gentlemen, in Europe and even in Mexico, there are treatments that work for a lot of things that you can get that you cannot get in the United States. For whatever reason, we deem them unmoral or unsafe, whatever it is, you can't get them here. And they're tried and true because people are going overseas and getting the treatments and they're working. So I don't know what our government's up to or what they're not up to. I know there's some real iffy stuff when it comes to stem cell research because of the way you have to get stem cells. But I'm figuring if you're going to abort your child anyway, you might as well get the stem cells. It just seems like a waste if you don't. But that's my own personal views there.
This is about three more books if you want to get into the medical area, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You could probably do a whole book just on it. I don't even think it would be a hard thing to do.
Not only that, we're going to have Jim back because, look, it's almost 1 hour into this program, and we haven't gotten to most of anything.
Yeah, we've been talking a little bit about it, but that's the thing. A lot of what we're talking about, and we don't want to give the whole book away. We want people to read the damn thing. But I want people to know who Jim is, and that's why we're talking. That's why I told you on the phone. You got to be careful, Jim. It's more like a conversation than anything else. So it's easy to get caught up. But anyway, getting back to actually what we were talking about, since Stephanie brought us back down to earth, you know, I was thinking, so you get up in the morning, you're walking up in the mountains. Especially back then, it had to be beautiful. Just get up, and I know the mornings are cool in Colorado, so it's probably a nice walk. Walking's a good way to start off with. Now, you know, I remember reading in the book about the worm bed in the back. You see, the damnedest things catch my attention. And, you know, I got to think about that because when we were growing up, we always had one, and we had a place where we had a patch in the yard where we would keep growing for the night crawlers and stuff like that. And then we had my grandpa had a tubby had sunk in the ground and turned it into a worm bed. He used to always be dumping coffee grounds on a regular
basis.
That's what we did. Yeah, big old fat worms in there, too. Beautiful. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is for anybody who still likes to fish old school or anything like that. I mean, that's how you make them, and they grow some big fat worms. And the reason I'm talking about this is because Jim was catching some rainbow trout, huh?
Yes. Yes.
That's a cold water trout. That's a good eating fish. I know when I was reading, I was getting hungry reading in the book. I'm like, damn. But anyway, I want you to just tell the audience a little bit about, you know, how you used to go out there, and then we'll talk about when you were up by the, by the reservoir.
Yeah, well, what happened was usually we went up in the mountains to go fishing. We'd go up for a weekend. And I had a friend, and he said, look, if you want to, it's an hour and a half hike from Golden, and he said, if you want to go out there and go fishing, he said, there's some big fish in this reservoir out there. So I got directions from him and everything. He said him and his dad had been up there fishing and caught some really great trout out of there. So I asked my parents if I could go out there, and they said, sure, take the dog. And make sure you're back on time. And it was like if I filed a flight plan and I didn't stick to it and do what they wanted me to, I'd never do it again, and I knew it. So I had to kind of stick to the plan. Anyway, I hiked up in there and got there to this reservoir, and it was a 12-foot-high chain-link fence with barbed wire around it all the way around this blasted thing. And I'm like, how did he ever get in there? You know, I couldn't climb in there or get in there. And then I saw there was a creek that fed it from the mountains. It came down into it, and I thought, well, maybe there's some fish in that creek. So I went through a 4-strand barbed wire fence with the dog, and it was a pretty good-sized creek, so I started fishing in the creek, and sure enough, boy, I was catching them right and left out of there. And I heard a waterfall up in the canyon, so I hiked up into this, where this waterfall was, which it looked to me like the fish, if they were in the reservoir and they came up there to spawn or whatever, they'd never get beyond this waterfall, so there wouldn't be anything above it. And I threw a line in there, and I hooked a fish that was so big it busted my line in probably 3 seconds. And I just couldn't believe it. And I went home that night. I already had 3 good ones in the creel, and I went home that night, and I told my parents about this fish I'd hooked, and my dad started teasing me. And he said, well, how big was it? And he's moving his hands apart, you know, about 3 feet. And I said, I don't know. I never saw it. It just broke my line. Oh, yeah, right. I've heard that before. Well, anyway, that started a vendetta with me, and I just decided I'm going to go catch that doggone fish no matter what, and I'm going to prove to him I'm not lying. There's not a fish story. So I started going up there, and I'd go up there on Saturdays, and I went up the next time, and I tried the pool again, and I caught some other good ones out of the rest of the creek, but couldn't get anything to happen. And then I went up another following Saturday, and this is when everything happened. I had a life-changing experience, and back then it really was for me. But I was almost up there to where the reservoir was, probably about 100 yards from the reservoir. I was between 2 big hogbacks and the front range of the Rocky Mountains in kind of a ascending valley. And I felt like something... Boy, that dog and I were trekking along there, and have you ever had that feeling that maybe somebody was looking at you from behind you?
Yeah, watching you.
Yeah, and I felt something, and I turned around, and there was a damn disc up there in the sky. And it scared the living wits out of me because it was huge. It looked as big as a house because I was real close to it. I was probably 150 yards from it. And it was probably 200 feet up in the air. And it was right there, and I swear I had flashbacks from comic books, from Flash Gordon.
Yeah,
and I thought, this thing's going to vaporize me and the dog. And I stood there and watched it, and it was like there was electric current in the air. Have you ever stood under power lines? Big ones?
Oh, yeah. I've actually been up in the air on them things.
Maybe yeah, comes from a dam or whatever, you know, and it'll make the hair stand up on your arms. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly what you're talking about.
Anyway, it felt like that, but I didn't have any hair on my arms, but my hair on my head was moving. And the dog was, I kept looking at the dog, and the dog was just sitting there right beside me staring at this thing. And we both watched it for about 15 minutes, and after about the first 5 minutes, I started to calm down because I was really scared. I really thought the thing was gonna vaporize us. But finally, it started probably after about 15 minutes. It started to move backwards, and kind of uphill backwards. And boy, I'll tell you what, it started out real slow, and then all of a sudden, within 2 to 3 seconds, that doggone thing just, it was like it turned on the JATO rocket assist or whatever. It just disappeared, gone, to where it wasn't even a speck. I couldn't even see it. And that was my experience at that time. And to me, airplanes had propellers back then, Joe and Stephanie, and that thing didn't have any propellers. And it was hovering in the air, and it was like, what on earth is going on? Because I didn't have much knowledge about flying saucers or anything like that back then. Yeah, anyway.
Well, but before you go on, let me ask them before you go on. Now, didn't you say in the book that the barbed wire fence that was like the Department of Energy or something?
The reservoir was a city water supply for Arvada, Colorado, but the barbed wire fence I went through had a DOE sign on it, Department of Energy sign.
Okay.
And it said no trespassing, but brother, I had hiked 7 miles up there, and I was going fishing no matter what. So wow. I went right through that. And the reason was
there was a uranium mine up in the canyon there, just a little ways beyond that waterfall I was talking about.
Hey, Jim, you got low on us, man. What happened?
I don't know. Are you there?
You're back now. Yeah, you got real low for a second. You must have moved the phone or something. You just got really, really low on us. But go ahead, finish what you were saying.
Anyway, there was a hole in the side of the mountain up there that was a uranium mine, and it was probably a test hole or whatever, which later on was developed into a huge mining operation that Potter Industries run. And we found out stuff, I've got stuff I found out since I wrote the book that just shocked me. Because I wondered always why that ship was there back then. But we found out that the largest deposit of pitch blend on the whole planet was right there. And Industries has about a 5-block square mining operation where they're mining the pitch blend, and it of course is used in Department of Energy, you know, operations.
Yeah.
And it explained something to me. This is after I wrote the book, or I would have put this in there. But it explained something to me that I'd been asking myself my whole life, and that's why was it there. But it's normal, I think, that they were there now because they're using nuclear energy to propel these craft. And the bottom line is they probably knew that supply was under the ground there and in the ground, and that's probably why the ship was there.
That's the whole reason I made you go back and let everybody know it was the Department of Energy, because it's not the first time I've heard of a UFO being sighted over Department of Energy land. It was an important thing because we've probably got 100, 150, maybe even more than that cases where they were on some type of land. Matter of fact, there's a piece in Arizona, it's like 5 square miles or maybe even bigger than that, that the DOE owns. And on a couple of times out there, there have been UFOs sighted. Matter of fact, there's a road that goes down the middle of it that runs through it that people use to get out there to, I guess, do a little hunting and stuff on the other side of it. They open up the left side as a reserve. And they're constantly seeing stuff as they're cruising down the road down there. So I think that not only do they probably use some of the materials here for fuels and all and energy, but I think in some cases they're just also curious to what we're doing with it. But it is.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
You know, back then I had no clue. I mean, there was absolutely no clue of any of this. But now that place, you ought to see what's happened there. A year ago, I went back out there and took a bunch of pictures out there. But they've turned that into a total restricted area. There must be about 20 square miles now. It's restricted area. They've got electric fences around the whole thing and electric gates that you have to use a card in, you know, to get through.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt about that.
And you can't even get close to that operation now.
Yeah.
And back when I...
That's a good stopping point because we got to take a break. We're at the top of the hour. I know, ladies and gentlemen, the first hour blew by so fast. We've got so much material to touch on. There's just no way we're going to get it all done. But a lot of good stuff to come in the second hour. We're going to finish this particular section when we get back. I'm going to let Jim finish what we were talking about here with the DOE and the area up there and the rest of the event there. And then we will move on to a couple other things. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you can get the book, Smoke and Mirrors, I mean the ebook is what, $10, I think, so it's cheap. You can go pick it up. He's got both paperback and hardback, and which, by the way, Jim, I like, because a lot of people don't go hardback anymore. And, you know, to me, a hardback book just has more class. That's the only way I can say it. I'm sorry. I know everybody loves paperbacks, but, you know, and ebooks, which are great, because I do like my pad, but there's something about a hardback-bound book. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the smell, whatever it is. But anyway, I'm going to stop you right there, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, run over to the website right quick if you want to catch up or see some of the stuff we're going on. The book's a good read. It's about, I want to say, for the average reader, probably about 10 minutes a chapter, so you can blow right through it pretty fast. You know, for the average reader, 2-3 hours, maybe 4, depending on how you want to read it. I know for some of y'all, speedy readers, like my wife, Linda, she probably read it in about 45 minutes. I can read at warp speed. I've seen her go through 500-page books like they're just candy. I'm like, get out of here, man. And retain it. That's what kills me. She retains everything in the damn book. You know, there's a lot of people can read fast like that. Give me a technical journal, I'll read really fast. But anyway, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget Stephanie Benetti's with us. She's hanging out with us and chatting tonight. Any feedback or anything y'all would like to hear in the show, you can write to Stephanie or I, courtesy of either one of her emails or any of the Facebook pages or any of the other pages for that matter. But on that note, we'll be back in about 8 minutes, so please stay tuned to the Joe Montalvo Show.
The moon was just a splitter, the light was Don't miss the summer premiere of Pretty Little Liars, Tuesday, June 5th, only on ABC Family.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select Other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272. Again, 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our 3-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe.
worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, "Any last wish before you die, y'all?" Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, "Fill your claw, you son of a bitch." Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you all enjoyed the first hour. We've covered quite a bit of stuff. And actually, book-wise, we've not even got near what we're going to get into. And we're going to get into some more stuff. We'll have Jim back in a couple weeks. We'll get him rescheduled, maybe 4 or 5 weeks. We've got some stuff going on, but I'll get him back in a few weeks. And we'll get deeper into it. There's quite a lot of material to go through here. Now, Jim, welcome back. Jim Allen, ladies and gentlemen, remember, too, just run over to the UFO on the cover site or the Joe Montaldo site, or you can go to UPN and Talk Radio any way you want. You will see the cover of Jim's book right there. Just click on it. It'll take you right where you can get your hands on it. On the bottom of the page is a nice write-up about the author down there. Actually, it was courtesy of your publishing company, and it's a very nice piece. Y'all can go down there and check that out. There's a wealth of material in this book. Now, I'm not going to say that everybody who reads it is going to agree with it. I'm not going to say some people are going to like it, some people are not going to like it, some people are going to fall in the middle somewhere. Some of y'all are going to find it hard on some of the stuff. Some of y'all are going to be like, "Wow, I didn't know that," or "I didn't know that," or "Damn, I didn't know that." So there's a lot of material in it. And I suggest you just go out and get it and read it. And like I said, it's actually a fairly relaxing, fairly fast read. So you can sit down, like when you're doing something. Well, this afternoon when I got in, I was doing some paperwork for my company. I actually had the pad set up on my 19-inch monitor. I clipped it on so I could actually read it while I was on, because I got an Acer pad. I was reading it while I was doing book work. But anyway, enough about all that. Stephanie, welcome back.
Hello.
Nice to have you out there. I know. Who was that?
So, Joe, wait. We're listening to United Public Radio, right? It's also UPRN 107.7 FM, New Orleans.
That's why I keep her around, y'all know.
Yeah, that's
right.
I
got through them damn station promos. Also, while we're on this, remember, ladies and gentlemen, we're bringing back sponsors to the United Public Radio. Folgers is going to sponsor part of the radio network and probably News on the Flip Side. I think it's going to start in about 2 weeks. Community Coffee has renewed its sponsorship with the Joe Montaldo Show. So I want to welcome them and tell them thank you, community. Hearing me talk about them more and more in the future, I gotta say, you know, I like the dark coffees, the deep roast coffees. If you ever listen to News on the Flip Side, you'll know I really like my coffee.
Wait a second. If the sponsors want somebody, they should be contacting me because I'll make sure I mention it.
They said my voice.
Lord have mercy.
they just said my stuff. Their voice is sexy. That's all.
Oh, really? I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Everyone loves a real New York. Come on.
But before we get back into the show, I am talking to someone locally in New York about running advertisement with us. So, and I told him that I would have a New Yorker do the advertisement.
And because he asked me what accent she had, I said, well, she's from Staten Island. I said, whatever accent that is, I don't know. I said, it's not a Bronx one, I know that much. I said, I don't know all the different accents. How the hell am I?
Staten Island probably has more of a Brooklyn kind of
accent. But actually, I'm talking with
that being said,
a friend of mine owns a shop down in Manhattan, a restaurant down there. So he's going to probably pick up some advertisements with us as well.
All right.
New
Yorkers have no time for this. All right, so what are we speaking of?
Let's actually going to bring Jim back, and we're just going to kind of pick up from where we left off. But before we even go on to that, Jim, I want to talk a little bit more about the saucer, because Jim and I were talking about Billy Myers yesterday afternoon, and that was a whole show in itself. Y'all should have heard that conversation. So you were describing, I wanted to make sure, because, you know, he's got about three different types of saucers that he films. And the one that you said looks most like was the one that was landed in the field?
No, Billy Meyer lives in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And a long time ago, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens went over there and spent a lot of time with him over there. And he took a picture of a UFO as it was moving. And it was way up on the side of the mountain in the meadows, and it was over a log pile in the air. This photo has been tested by hundreds of people trying to prove it wasn't real, but nobody's been able to say anything other than that it is real.
Yeah,
and
that's a really
photo of that UFO is what I saw. In other words, I saw one that looked just like it.
Yeah.
And
well, I'm just trying to figure out. I know he's got the UFOs with the little what I like to call the Doctor Who globes on them. They're like little balls on the tops and the sides, and then he's got the saucers that are it's a saucer with both raised top and bottom, but it's not a very high raised top and bottom. It's that, and then there's the one that it's hard to kind of tell the ones off in the distance, but he's got quite a few photos. And ladies and gentlemen, Billy Myers got some really good photos, and I have to agree with Jim here. He's got a lot of them that have been proven to be real. There are some fake ones in there, and whether he did them or they just got mixed in, anybody can argue that. So you got to be careful, but we had DreamWorks. I think there was 50 they tested all together. Might have been more than that. Whatever the batch was that was sent to us, we had sent to them and had them do. They've actually tested quite a few photos for us over the years. And they really, and not just us, they've done it for other people as well. And I know Bruce McAbee looked at a few of them, too. I'll have to find out what his take was on them. But anyway, getting back to what we were talking about, I wanted y'all to know so y'all could actually go look. I'm actually looking at the picture he's talking about right now that's over the field, and there's some logs underneath, and there's something else off to the right. I'm not sure what that is. It's your typical everyday saucer. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. It's just your typical everyday saucer. But type in Billy Myers pics, or type in Billy Myers UFO pics, I should say, and or saucer pics, however you want to do it. Jump up there. Y'all can thumb through them and look and get an idea of what Jim's talking about. And it's important because, you know, over the years we've categorized what aliens go with what ships. And it's kind of important to get the right ships down. And it's more so important because later, if we get to Roswell this week or next time we have him on, it's important because we've made some discoveries in the Roswell that suggest that there may not have been – there was definitely a saucer there, but there's been a lot of argument about the other craft that it because of the way it dissolved and broke up, was more probably some type of shuttlecraft or cargo ship than it was any type of spacefaring ship, because frankly, most ships that would be able to traverse space and go through the radiation and deal with the pressures at high speeds like that, most of them wouldn't even break up on impact. And if they did, it wouldn't be all that bad. It'd rip off part or side or punch a hole or something, because the way the crafts are made and the type of materials they're made out of makes it much harder than anything we have on the planet. So something made out of the same material may have punched a hole in it or helped to tear a hole in it so it could have been tore bigger. And if the object was like a shuttlecraft or something like that, it would have easily been destroyed by the bigger craft. So, anyway, I wanted to bring that up. We're going to get into that later on. But anyway, Jim, I wanted to
actually, Joe, let me say something here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right on your cover sheet of UFO Undercover, you on the left side of it, looking at it, you've got a flying saucer there.
Yeah,
that's what I saw.
Well, there you go.
That's the same ship. That's the same ship.
And that, you know, it's interesting because that is one of the most popular UFOs. You know what's really more interesting about this ship than anything else? This ship is in ancient biblical pictures.
All right, so I have to take a look at this now. Just to see.
You will find this ship in Christian artwork from the Middle Ages into recent times and even before the Middle Ages. This also saucer has actually shown up in two different Egyptian temples. It's significant because this is something that's been going around for a long time on this planet. They're way back in our past, and it seems like this has been ongoing for quite some time. And it's nice to see, I guess, you know, when you create a design that works, you don't change it, huh? Maybe the inside.
Yeah.
Like we do. We build an aircraft carrier and just rebuild the inside every decade or so.
All the ships and the pieces of ships and what they have out at S4 beyond Area 51 all look like the ship you've got on your headline there at UFO Undercover. They're all the same stuff.
Yeah.
And whether there's more than one species that flies that ship, that's not determined. But I know of two right now that do it. Two complete different things.
Yeah, well, we know the reptilians use what we call an elongated saucer. It's like a saucer that was kind of stretched. But we know the humans and the greys both use a type of saucer. It's just usually in the greys' case, they're usually a bit bigger and a little bit wider and a little bit thicker. And the greys actually have one that's a rectangle that they actually land them damn things on. But I noticed with the humans, because a lot of the big triangles, the ones that have been sighted out over Tampa and Arizona and California, the ones that are 2, 3, 4 miles across, those are big ships. Those are human, usually touted to the alien, to the human aliens. But they see saucers coming and going out of time, which suggests they're using, maybe it's not the same saucers as greys, but they're definitely similar designs, I guess we'll say. Because right now, I think we've categorized about 50 different types of saucers. But I got to be honest with you, we only really worry about 5 of them because those are the ones cited the most. You may have 100 or 500 or 300 cases with those particular. Those have got more, you know, pull to them. Some of the other cases, 4 or 5 people seen or 2 or 3 people seen, those not so much because they may have seen something and been distorted by air or light or something and different. So we don't give those as much credibility. But any of the ones over 100, we take very serious. Because especially when they show up in ancient artwork, in ancient text, in ancient hieroglyphs, those are significant things in the world. And it really makes you think. And like with you, and the reason we're talking about this, ladies and gentlemen, because I know from talking to Jim, and I'm going to get him to tell you a little bit about it, this experience he's talking about when you were, what, 12, 11?
11, yeah, 11, going on 12.
Yeah. Is life-changing. And anybody, and him, Jim and I talked about this yesterday on the phone, anybody who's had a true experience, whether it's an up-close sighting or maybe you've seen something or maybe even were taken, it fundamentally changes who and what you are.
That is so true.
So, but anyway, Jim, I mean, is this true for you? I mean, I know you definitely felt like, wow, what the?
Yeah, and, you know, back then, and this is the truth, back then, if I'd have went home and told my parents about this, I'd have been in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably would have been grounded because I'll tell you right now, back then they would persecute you for saying something like what I experienced. And you are a crackpot. They'd commit you in a mental institution.
Oh, I could see that.
And it just wasn't an accepted thing back then, so I never told my parents. And I didn't tell my dad until he was on his deathbed 25 years later. I kept that a total secret. And it was a load to carry, let me tell you. But what happened is it caused me, what really got me going was they came out with Project Blue Book. Mm-hmm. And I got a hold of it and read it, and they said everything that was supposed UFO was either swamp gas or weather anomaly or whatever, and that it wasn't real and that there was no conclusive proof they existed,
yeah.
And that's what started me.
other than the 867 cases that went unexplained.
Yeah. And technically, we now know that at that time, they had physical evidence in their hands.
They
had control of it. And they lied, and that's what started me on a quest to find out the truth. And, of course, I was destined to not find out the truth, because, brother, that gets you in a lot of trouble back then, messing with that stuff.
It gets you in a lot of trouble today if you ain't careful where you're going with it.
That's true. And what happened was, on the way to trying to find the truth about this, I ran into all this other stuff that I wrote about in my book that is also lies and is also cover-up and is also conspiracy. And when there's so much of it, you're carrying a pretty good load on your shoulders, if you know what I mean. It's some pretty heavy stuff.
But that's the whole problem. When you start looking into lies, you usually find more lies. Lies on top of lies on top of lies on top of lies. It seems like, you know, once they built the foundation, they just felt the need to keep lying. It's like, oh, well, yeah, we done told this lie. We might as well just keep on, you know, lying. And at this point, you know, it's in some ways I can understand the government's point of view here. One, are we ready to know the truth about extraterrestrials? No, we're not. As a species, we're not ready to know the truth. Definitely 50 years ago, we were definitely not ready as a country, much less a world. But the 7,200,000,000 of us that live on planet Earth today are not ready for ET. Maybe a billion is. Maybe two. No more than that. The other 5 billion will just become panically insane, either worshiping ET or trying to blow ET up. We're just not ready for that yet. So I can understand them keeping that. I can understand wanting
right,
to keep technology for themselves against our enemies.
Ready? When are people ready? Really?
Well, you know, I've talked about this before. I told everybody this a long time ago. The government started the desensitization program back in the 50s, actually. And have been running it ever since. They leak things from time to time.
Desensitizing, right?
Yeah, well, there was Project Science, Project Grudge, and then Project Blue Book. This was all to keep it in the public eye. Then there was the Betty and Barney Hill case. But every so often, there was something high profile that kept it in. The Ketchburg case, just different cases, the Roswell case. There was always something to keep this mainstream for people to be thinking about it. And the government could have stifled a lot of this a long time ago if they wanted to. So, in fact, they do want it talked about. And they want some of the truth out there, because sooner or later they got to tell us. But the only really way to do it, and I told this a long time ago, they were going to start using television and media and cartoons to desensitize not us but our children and everybody else. I mean, aliens are everywhere today. All the blockbuster movies are aliens. All the blockbuster cartoons are aliens. I mean, come on. What, the tubby television guys are aliens. I mean, they're aliens with TVs in their bellies. It's ridiculous how, I mean, Doritos, Kellogg's, cereals. I mean, aliens are everywhere now. They're everywhere. In all movies, TV shows, we're inundated with it. In another 50, 100 years, by the time, and this is how it's going to really happen. Y'all can go back and listen to this from 14 years ago when I talked about it. I said,
Joe,
it's going to happen. Go ahead.
Joe and Stephanie, I've got something real interesting I'm going to lay on you.
Go ahead.
Okay? Think about this. Let's put things opposite of what they are, and let's make you and Joe and Stephanie are aliens, and they live out there on this planet where it's really nice and it's glorious, and they come down here and they visit us, and they look at us, and they watch what we do, and they watch the wars and the conflicts and the horrendous weapons that we use on each other. And all the stuff we've got, think about this. Would you want them to come to your house?
I wouldn't want none of these idiots around my house.
Lord have mercy, I think they are coming to my house.
Well, the bottom line here is, I don't think we will ever have the ability for extreme interstellar travel until we learn to live in peace on this planet. Because we're on the verge of destroying ourselves and the planet at any given minute.
That's why we're going to Mars. You ever seen a TV show, Get Your Ass to Mars? That's why we're going to Mars. Actually, according to the Russians, we've been on Mars since 1979. One of the files released by the KGB
after the Cold War ended was a joint U.S.-Russian colony on Mars that was supposedly founded in 1975 using, by the way, TR-3 Black Triangle technology. That's what they said the SR-71 was based on in the first place. One of these things that were either given to us or backward engineered somewhere along the line. So I don't, whether it's true or not, I don't know. Of course, Alfred Weber thinks it's 100% true. Whether it is or not, I really don't know. It may or may not be. But I can tell you this, I actually talked about this with Michio Keiko, about the stepping stones. You don't need fast and light travel to explore the galaxy. It's only 100,000 light years across. If man makes it 5 million years, or even a million years for that matter, even at half a light speed, we can explore the entire galaxy 10 times over in that time. All you got to do is build stepping stones, build a base on Mars, build a base out in the asteroid belt, build a base on Europa, Io, build another one at the Oort cloud, build one between us and Proxima Centauri, build one on Proxima Centauri, and just keep going. Eventually, we'll have explored the entire known galaxy. We can do it if we really want to, but you're right, it'll have to be a united planet, because you're not getting in space. I mean, we might go to Mars, not as a united planet, but you're not getting into real space without being a united planet. Just the expense, and not even the expense, the amount of resources and power and energy and technology and invention and minds that it'll take to do this will have to be on a global scale. It really will have to be on a global scale. So, you know, if we're going to get out past our own solar system, I agree with you. You know, we're going to have to do it as Earthlings, not as Americans or Russian or Chinese, which I think is a valuable lesson for everybody on the planet. We are Earthlings. Get rid of the countries. We're all from the same planet. And now, you know, one of the other things they're going to do is probably in the next 10 years, you will hear they have found some type of life on Mars. Probably microbiological, but they're going to find something on Mars, whether it's a plant, some kind of microbe, they're going to find it alive on the planet today, and of course that's going to change everything. Then later on somewhere else, maybe out on one of the moons, they're going to find something a little bit more advanced, maybe on Mars. Then after that, mysteriously, maybe on Mars, maybe on some other planet, we're going to find an artifact. So now we'll know that there's life out there because we found living organisms, and then the artifact will suggest, well, you know what, there's intelligent life somewhere out there. And that will be an easy way. They can break in a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, and artifacts will let us know now that there's intelligent life in the universe, but still it's not bothering us. So it's just interesting to see how this is unfolding. And it's exactly how it's going to go down. It's just the only way it can be for the U.S. government. There's no other way they can do it without, well, just totally losing all credibility. At this point, I know about 2 million abductees that would sue the living daylights out of the government if they came forward and said, oh, yeah, we know about aliens. Just think what our allies would do. Think what our enemies would do if they knew we were dealing with extraterrestrials. But anyway.
Well, you know,
yeah, but wouldn't they
later
be-
when... Later, when we get into this later and get into the UFO stuff heavy, there's a lot of stuff, but I'm going to say one more thing, and that's that we've had hundreds of reports that were eyes only above top secret reports of ships hovering over missile silos in Wyoming and Montana and Colorado and taking it from DEVCON 1 all the way to DEVCON 5 and back in a matter of 30 seconds. We've had military personnel who had to have their finger right next to the launch button and ready to start a World War III because of it, and some of them committed suicide right in the missile silos.
You know,
and
it's not the first time I heard it, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, my knowledge is that Earth is one of seven living planets. Or seven living libraries is what they call it. And I don't believe they'll ever let us destroy ourselves. And I think they have the technology, they've proven that they can do it, and I think if we ever get to the point to where it's launch, I think they'll stop it because of just that. They will not let us destroy the planet.
See, I don't know if I agree with you there or not. After World War II and letting us bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki and Fukushima and some of the other stuff that's been going on,
I don't know if they feel like that, because they may have already removed a segment of the population, and they could easily clean up any radioactive damage done to the planet as well within their technological scope. So I'm not sure if they would stop it. To them, it might be a thinning of the 7,200,000,000 of us that live here, and by then there might be 10 billion of us. They may allow for a little thinning of the herd. It always bothers me, because I got to be honest, I judge everyone by their actions. And even with the extraterrestrials, even if you give them in the best light, they're still, their actions are questionable at best. You know, sneaking up on power plants, sneaking up on people in the woods, sneaking up people here, to me, that warrants a little mistrust. Not to say that, I got to be honest with y'all about this, ladies and gentlemen, before we go any further. If E.T. wanted to save us, they could. If they wanted to destroy us, they could. Currently, they're letting us find their own way for the most part, which is probably the right thing to do. I don't know if I agree with Jim or not if they would save us. I'll say this much. I think they would save some of us. I just don't know if they would save all of us. And look at it from their point of view. 10 billion people, well, really, does the planet need 10 billion people? I'm probably going to thin down to about 4 billion. It would be much easier on Gaia and Mother Earth anyway. So I think humans can grow into a population 30, 40, 50 billion if we get off world, and start colonizing around the universe and stuff, around the galaxy. But staying here, no. I mean, I heard NOAA once put out a report with the UN about the world population could only grow to 26 billion because, and that's if you, by the way, if you turned all of South America into farmland, and most of America, you could feed 26 billion people and you could have the oxygen and the minerals, but that was the maximum about. And eventually we wouldn't be able to sustain that because sooner or later we would run out of resource and kill the soil. So, that's the absolute max. So, a good total for us is probably 7 or 8 billion. We don't really need to exceed much more than that. And, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, Jim. I think in the next 2 decades, we're going to be up over 10 billion easily.
Well, knowing you know what I know, and I know you do, that fits into areas like Agenda 21 and other areas that I'm sure you're knowledgeable on, about sustainable survivability, emission reduction.
and it's been, and you know what's funny about this, you know, we're laughing about this, but if you've ever done any serious research into the into a lot of the U.S. government, there are actually theories about sustainable populations, areas where people should be saved, where people, it would be acceptable losses, what are acceptable casualties in certain types of scenarios. It's amazing to me some of the stuff our government's thought about. And let me tell you what, a lot of it is not really pleasant for we the people. I tell this to everybody, you should always make yourself where you can be self-sustaining as possible. Just on the outside chance that something might go awry. I just got to be honest with y'all. Move somewhere, anybody who lives in a big city, is risky business, because somewhere like New York or even New Orleans, we've seen what happened in New Orleans after Katrina. 10,000 people rampaging across the city, committing crimes, killing people, robbing, pillaging. We've seen what happened. Just think of a city like New York, if it lost all of its power and all of its refrigeration and no food coming in for, say, 2 weeks. They would be going cannibalistic up there. So you have to think about ways out and places to go and sustainable areas. I know it would be. I know. And it's just a scary scenario. And together, I know Jim and I were talking. I had just seen a question come in about a lady had wrote, let me rephrase this. Her name is Jan Westing, and she's writing in from Temple, California. And she wanted to know, how did you feel anything from the UFO when you seen it? Did you have any sense? Was there any kind of telepathic contact or anything along those lines? Nice question, by the way.
Yes, well, nothing that I was aware of at the time. Nothing happened. My feet stayed on the ground. My dog sat right next to me. I wasn't abducted. I wasn't lifted. Nothing like that. But could there have been some telepathic stuff done? It's highly possible, simply because it did change a lot of attitudes that I had and a lot of things. And I don't know. To be real honest with you, I couldn't prove it. I couldn't say that for sure that that's true. But there were many things in my head that I know didn't come from my parents or any other peers. And they showed up later.
Yeah,
and as I went through life, yeah, and it's like, well, where the heck did I get that? You know, and
we call that a down.
Wait, let me say something on this. You know, all right, so I wonder where all this paranormal and UFO and whatever and how Joe and I met and all of this comes together, right? And my dad, and Joe, I had mentioned this to you, he has Alzheimer's, and he said to me one day out of nowhere, just nowhere, first of all, he goes, you know, like, so he was talking about the network and being on the radio, and he goes, oh, you're doing a show tonight? He goes, oh, you're on that UFO, you know, network, and I said, mm-hmm, right, and I'm sitting there, like, I'm eating pasta, doing the whole Italian thing on a Sunday, and I just look at him, and he looks at me, and he goes, you know, I really know that UFOs and all of this is true. And I'm like, all right, and I'm thinking to myself, like, is he delirious? Where is this coming from? And then he goes, you know, all this, and he was talking back in the 60s, and he comes up with this big conversation about, like, you know, X amount of million people can't be wrong, and this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, all right, where's this coming from? And then a week later, he said this, and I won't forget it. So I go there, and I have two big golden retrievers, and they were, like, playing in the yard, and then I'm talking to him, and I'm putting them back in the car, and I'm going home, and he goes to me, he goes, you know, and he was talking about, I don't even know if he was talking about his Alzheimer's or what he was talking about, but he goes, you know, the aliens did this to me. And I looked at him, and I went, what? And he said, the aliens did this to me. And I was like, all right, let me go. So what do you think about that?
Well, let me tell you something. You all know who Travis Walton is. He was abducted up at Snowflake, Arizona. And the second day he was gone, I was there. I went to Snowflake. And at the time, I lived in outside of Las Vegas. And I went up there, and I saw Travis when I got to see him when he finally got back. And I'm telling you, we had a guy in our group that was lifted twice off of a black sand beach in Hawaii. The first time they took him, they did a bunch of stuff to him, and he looked just about exactly the same as Travis did. Same stuff done to him, all over his body. And the last thing that happened to him, now you're going to find this interesting, the last thing that happened to him was they did not speak. They telepathically spoke. He said he never heard a word out of them except that it went right into his mind, just like somebody was talking. And he said that when they were done doing all these experiments on him, and he was hurting like hell and bleeding from here and there, he said that one of them looked down at him and said, are you ready to be consumed? And he said, no. He says, I got too much to do tomorrow. And they dropped him back down on the beach. Now, there's one for you.
I know. That's crazy. That's just wow.
Yeah, and they picked him up again a year and a half later. They picked him up again. Jeff Graff was his name. And went through the same thing, only they were more like checking what they had done before, rather than doing the initial stuff they did to him. And then they ask him the same thing. And I guess in his mind, he said, well, it worked once, you know. So he used it again, and they put him back down on the beach.
Hmm.
Yeah, that actually may be cover memories. There, you got to be careful with that stuff. That,
all right, let's talk about. Wait, Joe, you've mentioned cover memories a lot, and well, or at least you and I have spoken about it. But let's talk about more about that. Like, so, you know, I've had a lot of experiences in my own house, and you say to me, that could be a cover memory. What does that really mean?
Cover memories are just that. Sometimes they take you. This is the thing, and this is hard for everybody to understand, especially people who have UFO sightings. 90% of everybody who's seen a UFO has probably been taken. The thing about it is they don't let you remember. They'll let some people remember some stuff, and it really has more to do, see, like with the guy Jim's talking about right here. He seems like he's kind of maybe a little bit of a character. So he's going to probably be a little less frightened, maybe a little bit more willing to deal with some of the stuff. So they'll leave part of the memory, or they'll change a memory because of something they may have done, because there are a lot of things that they do that for humans would consider not appropriate or even a little bit on the harsh side. It's not that they're trying to be mean or even harmful. It's they just have a different way of viewing the universe than we do. And some things are like, hey, you know, it's just how it is. You just got to deal with it. When we're done, we're done. And in some of those cases, they just block that out or blot it out. Sometimes they leave you messages. In Jim's case, it sounds like with you, Jim, when you had the first experience down there when you were 11, it actually sounded like they gave you a download. And downloads are something we've been familiar with for about two decades. This is information packets put into someone's head, and they have like a bleeding effect. It's just information. It changes your thoughts, your ideas, but also you'll pick up information beyond your educational means. You'll think about things that you would not normally think about, things that it's just information. You're like, where the hell did this actually come from? Because it's not stuff, like you said, you didn't get it from your parents. You probably didn't learn it in school either. It's just information that was imparted to you, and I think as you grow and expand as a human, more that information is released as you can understand it, cope with it, and deal with it. Because as 11, they couldn't have just unloaded the whole packet on you. It would have probably fried your little brain. So they put the download in there, and over the time, it's just been bleeding out. And the bad part is it, Jim, it might be still of it, some of it in there.
All right.
I'm with you. Now, I'm totally with you on that. Something like that is highly possible.
Yeah,
highly possible.
And it really, it just really what it seemed like, but, and you know, I know
Joe,
you have to drive.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So what about if you've never had a sighting, but you've only had experiences?
Doesn't matter. You don't have to have a sighting to have an experience.
Well, but that's my case. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh, I've seen UFOs or,
well,
you know.
Well, let me put it this way. There's more. If you go by the numbers, there's more abductees than there are UFO sightings, or more contactees or experiences or whatever you want to, you know, everybody has their own terminology for it, so I don't want to get stuck on that. But, you know, everybody has those experiences. You don't have to have a UFO sighting to have an experience. A UFO sighting, to me, works like a trigger memory or an activation point. Like in Jim's case, he was downloaded. The memory of the sauce is in his head. This is a trigger. This is going to make him want to seek out this type of information. So as he's learning stuff about the government and other UFO cases, the stuff that's been downloaded is also filtering in, expanding his knowledge base, but also making his curiosity and his drive more intense. And that's what happens in most of these cases. And I think that's why a lot of people aren't let to remember, because they just can't handle it. It takes over their life, and they just can't deal with it. It's too much. It changes a lot of people, not for the good. A lot of people like us get changed for the good. It seems like it may have been good for Jim, but a lot of people, it has the opposite effect. And it really has, it has more to do with personality, upbringing, your understanding of yourself and the universe and everything in it. So it's really important to understand that. You know, listening to Jim talk and reading the book, he seems like he was well-balanced, you know, pretty normal, everyday American kid with some curiosities and some drive. And I think it was something that they could deal with when they seen him and they downloaded and they said, okay, this young man, you know, may have potential as he grows down the line. And I think part of that, Jim, by the way, was the drive to get to the truth, because E.T. is not going to land on a white front house lawn and tell everybody we're here, but they do want it disclosed. So that's why they have people like you and other people who get out there and talk about it and have this drive to get to the truth.
You know, here's something interesting, Stephanie and Joe. the first thing that came to my mind once that thing was gone and I started hiking back up the hill towards the reservoir was God drives a spaceship. And I'm telling you the truth, that's what came to my mind.
Well, I'm telling you, in a lot of those pictures, God is driving a spaceship. It's crazy you said it like that. But I can understand that point of view.
Jim's a good man.
And let me tell you what the result of that was. Sunday morning, my parents used to always take me to Sunday school. They were trying to bring me up right, you know, which they were great parents. Anyway, that Sunday morning, my dad said, "You're not ready. You've got to get ready right now or you're going to be late for Sunday school." And I said, and I don't even know where this came from, I said, "Dad, I'm not going to Sunday school." And, I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. And he says, "Why?" And I said, "I just don't believe what they're teaching me there is right." And the next thing I know, he goes in the kitchen, and him and my mom are in there going, you know, between themselves.
Yeah, I bet you they were.
And he comes back out of the kitchen, and he says, "Okay." And that was it. And that's the last time I went to Sunday school.
And that just means...
Now, that was a direct result of that, and I know it was, for whatever reason.
Well, because you understood at that moment... that it's not that there may or may not be a God. It's probably not what we were being taught by religion. You know, because there's a lot of stuff in the ancient world, when you look back at it, especially stuff that we know now is probably related to extraterrestrials. You know, a lot of what E.T. does could easily be misconstrued as, you know, or some type of deity or being or something like that. You know, I don't know if you ever read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf. But in it, he talks about why he did what he did. And one of the reasons why is these fair-haired, beautiful angels used to come talk to him and tell him what to do. They sound a whole hell of a lot like the Palladians. They just used to show up in his room and talk to him and tell him how to do it and what he should be doing. And you know, we know the Germans had extraterrestrial contact. We know they were building saucers back in 1913. So it just seems like, and it makes you worry a little bit, because were these aliens telling him to do this, or was he just taking what they were saying and turning it into something else? Because, you know, Hitler wasn't the smartest person on the planet. You just got to kind of wonder there, but it is an interesting read. And when you read it, when he describes it,
let's take the same type thing and apply it to George Washington, when his army was starving to death and they were freezing to death and the war was all but lost, and he had a visitor.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's just, you know, you just got to kind of step back and wonder, you know, what's going on. And see, that would make sense, because listen, George Washington's or his mental state was probably much different than Hitler's was. You know, Hitler seemed to be maybe a picked on kid, maybe bullied when he was young or something.
Like Putin, right?
Oh, Putin. I love Putin. That is stupid. We ain't even talking about Putin.
Oh, you know what, Jim, you have to listen to Joe and I on Saturday nights.
Yeah, we get a little crazy with him sometimes. He's you know what? We're going to be doing a show in the future on 9/11, or as I like to call it, 9/11. We'll have to have you on.
9/11. Come on, I'm from New York.
Whatever, New York.
Wait. 9/11 is 20 minutes away from my house, Joe. Don't even speak of it. It's not 9/11.
Anyway, we're going to be doing a show on it. Future and some of the conspiracies dealing with as just a set, because frankly it's very, very interesting what he writes in there. And I know, like I said, we're not going to get time to get into it tonight, but there is a chapter in there about 9/11, and it's something that we're going to be doing in the future, because, you know, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories on the towers and what brought them down and what may have not brought them down and who was involved. Was it
right? And we would love to think that our government was not involved, but
there
well,
are
regardless,
it wasn't the Bush government because it was too fast. It would have had to have been the Clinton government. There's no way the Bush government could have pulled it off in 9 months. Not if they said they brought it down the way they did. So it took. It
you
was
know,
long
I was there like a week before. I was at those buildings a week before. It is so crazy. Like, and to think our government, like, it sickens me to think our government could possibly be involved with something like that.
The government doesn't surprise me. You know, some of the stuff that's in Jim's book about Ruby Ridge, I mean, come on. They blew the kid's arm off and shot him in the back. I mean, and then in the
running, end, now, wait a minute. Running away from them.
Running away from them. This is exactly correct what went on here. Then they shot his wife in the head while they were holding the baby. Now, in the end, Randy and, what was it, Kevin, you know, had to go to court, and eventually they were found that they were not guilty, but... The thing about all this was, I mean, they killed his son and his wife. And if these guys wouldn't have showed up, they would have probably killed him and his friend and his daughters and his baby. I mean, this was basically an assassination is what this was. For whatever reason it was, this was basically, for some reason or another, they were basically going to assassinate these people. And you just got to wonder what was the mentality about that. Just like in Waco, there was so much stuff that went on Waco that you just got to kind of wonder what the frick was the government thinking. Or who did these people piss off might be a better way of saying it.
Well, that's going to be an interesting conversation. And when we get there, we think we know what's going on then, and we think we know what's going on right now with Jade Helm 2015.
Yeah.
And when we get on the next show, I'll tell you about it.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, ladies, I mean, we will be having him back in a couple of weeks because, like I said, this may be three shows we may end up doing because, as we see, we've only covered Chapter 1 tonight, and we've touched on two or three other chapters, but there's a lot more material in here. And really, I really want to get into in depth with the Kennedy stuff, the Awakening stuff. I want to talk about the money some. He paints a pretty interesting picture about the Reserve Bank and paper notes and gold and silver, and there's a lot of good material in there as well. And so it's all stuff you want to get in there, but... Since we're going to be doing this, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. Like I said, I'll give him a call next day or two, and we'll get the date set up. But what you ought to do in the next week or so, go by, pick up the book from Amazon or from any, I think it's on Barnes & Noble and other places. So pick up the book, give it a good read. We'll open up the phone lines. I've seen about a dozen people try to call in tonight, but there was no way. We were too far off of where we were.
I know.
So anyway, we'll have him back. We'll have Steph back with us, and we'll get more into it because, there's you know, I'd like next time we get him on, we'll get through some of the money stuff, and we'll get into Ruby Ridge and Waco. Maybe we'll even make it to the Oklahoma case as well. And I like, by the way, Jim, I like the way you did the chapters, the way you kind of worked them through. Also, we're going to be talking about Roswell and some other stuff in there, too, and some other cases, but that might be on the third one. I don't know. There's a lot of material here to cover, and we're just going to take our time and go through it the way it should be handled. That way, when you read the book, you'll, because there's no way we're going to get all of them. Even on three shows, you'd still have a good half the book to go read, but we want you to have a good feeling and understanding for who Jim is first. And what you're going to be reading, because you know, I usually stay away from the conspiracy stuff because it always starts trouble with people. So I usually stay away, but there's a lot of good material in here. I'd really like to go through quite a lot of it and see actually where it ends up. Why is there a credit card on my desk bent in half? Okay, I didn't like that.
ADD.
Sorry, I just see a credit card in front of me bent in half.
ADD,
I didn't like that.
ADD people.
That wasn't a good thing.
But Jim. Joe has ADD and I have OCD, so yeah. We both have issues.
Now you know why I went 4 hours on Saturday, okay? Somebody.
Well, I'm here to tell you. I'm here to tell you. I think you guys are great, and I think you're as knowledgeable as anybody I've ever talked to about this stuff, and that's a good thing. That's a really good thing.
Well, like I said, we're going to get into a lot of it.
Us two maniacs, the OCD, the ADD, is why we're able to do a four-hour show on a Saturday. So,
and by the way, when you get into the later chapters in Jim books, there's a lot of good UFO material back there as well. And we're going to definitely get into some of that as well. But really, just the things I was touching on, the Awakening, the Money, the Ruby Ridge, Oklahoma, and Waco, there's a lot of material in there, y'all, and we're going to really get into it and get to discussing it We will open the phone lines and ask for anybody who wants to contribute to any of those cases or any knowledge you may have on any of this stuff we're going to get into. We definitely want to talk about the Kennedy thing some because, you know, Kennedy was a fascinating president to start off with. Whether you agree or disagree that he was a good man, and I know a lot of people liked Kennedy and a lot of people didn't like Kennedy. I know a lot of people didn't like him for the stance he took with Russia and the Cuban Missile Crisis, which I thought was the only stance he could take, but still, I know some people don't, but and I know there's a lot of different theories on why he died. So we're going to get into it. By the way, I didn't know that Kennedy was going to end Vietnam or end the whatever the hell we want to call it we were doing. That was surprising, yeah. By the way. So anyway, we'll talk a little
bit about that. Well, he was also going to end the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, which I wish he would have. Excuse me. I wish you guys that done. I hate that our money is based on nothing. It just, the old gold standard, silver standard was fine. You know, why we quit making silver money? I understand. Oh, watch out.
You know, Joe, you're running over. You realize that.
We're gonna get out of here in about 5 minutes. But it just bothers me that we base our money on nothing. I mean, it's what is it? A promissory note at best?
Mm-hmm.
It's paper, people, but a little strip of metal in it. I mean, it's technically it's worthless, and our poor metal money now costs more to make than it's worth. That's just sad. I think the dime, the nickel, and the penny now cost us more to make.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I watched a documentary of Australians, and they were talking about what is with this penny, like. You people, why are you doing this? Because it costs more money to make than it's worth. And that's true. But then there's the other thing. You know, I lived in London for a long time, and as you know, I was there. Everything is exactly what it costs. Like, if something is $3 or whatever, €3, that's it. There's no tax. The tax is included. So in America, we do this stupid thing of, oh, yeah, it's $299 plus tax. Include the tax. That's it.
Well, the reason why they do that is one, a lot of people wouldn't buy it when they see how much a tax was associated with it. But two,
exactly.
Every state and every city has a different amount of tax.
So what?
I agree. It should just
call
be
it for what it is. Call it for what it is. This is $302. That's it.
Why did our forefathers fight the war over the Tea Party and what happened? Why did they do it? It was about taxation without representation.
Basically, it was the illegal income tax that we have today. You do yeah. know, Jim, yeah. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, ladies and gentlemen, but we actually pay more in taxes today than our forefathers did when they started the revolution. That's ridiculous. So what we pay in tax today, our ancestors would have started the war over. You know, guys, any way you look at this, the income tax is illegal and unconstitutional. It was never meant to be the burden of the government was never meant to be
put on the people. But this is not news on the flip side.
But no,
the burden of the government was meant to be taken care of with excise taxes.
Yes.
Not income tax.
Yeah, it was never meant to be on the back of us, and frankly, it's just, when you start looking at the kind of money oil companies make and other companies make, there's no reason for us to have to fund our own government. If we would balance it out correctly, this country could run smoothly and still be one of the wealthiest nations in the world and still have a big military. First off, we need to get rid of corruption, and we need to lend, let me put it this way. If you lived like the government lived, you would be totally bankrupt all the time.
Exactly.
None of your lenders would allow you to get $17 trillion in debt. I mean, that's just ridiculous when you even hear that $17 trillion in debt. What the hell, man? And where'd all that money go? I want some reckoning going on here. But anyway, I know we got to get out of here, Jim. I want to tell you thanks for being on tonight. It was fabulous. I know we didn't get near covered what we should have, but we'll get you back. And sometime in the next few weeks, I'll give you a call next day or two, and we'll get you scheduled in and get you on, and we'll get definitely into some more meat and potatoes. There's a lot of good material to go through. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Allen, Smoke and Mirrors, y'all should check it out. It's available on Amazon. I'm going to leave him posted up on the site for a couple of weeks, so I'll just move it down as I add a new guest. And that way y'all can just click on the cover of the book, and it'll take you right to where it's at. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said, he's going to be back 4 to 6 weeks, so you ought to go purchase the book. Good read. Y'all know the call-in number, 504-273-7379. Y'all can come join us and get your 5 cents worth in and your 2 minutes of fame. And there you go.
Thank you, everyone.
Hey,
you
Jim, any parting words before I let Stephanie take us out?
Well, I'll be looking forward to coming back, and it's an honor. I've really enjoyed this, and it's really a good deal where you have some fun over this stuff.
Yeah, well, we like to enjoy, you know, because our audience likes good data. We've been talking about really good material tonight, but they also like that, you know, we enjoy ourselves when we do it. Because in the old days, I used to do radio a little bit tad more serious than I do these days, but I have more fun this way, and I find our audience tend to retain more information this way. I notice when they call me, they're like, yeah, they're much better informed now. But again, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Allen, he'll be joining us back in a couple weeks. Stephanie, you want to walk us out of here?
Yes, I shall. All right, so I am the co-host of the Joe Montalvo Show. You're listening to United Public Radio. It's also UPRN 107.7 FM. Thank you for listening, everyone, and good night.
And good night.
Here to anyone.